Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new series, the Soleri Health Series. Our first episode is called The Inspiration to Take Action with Jennifer Walters, and I am here to introduce her as the new host of the new series, the Soleri Health Series. So before I dive in to introduce you, Jennifer, first let me just say welcome and thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. You have no idea.
So I discovered you because you kept giving me great advice. You kept putting comments to the Soleri report. And I finally said, who is this person? I've got to know more. So let me introduce you. You hail from the Los Angeles area and you are a nurse. And I sent you a link. I don't know if you realize this, you might, but consistently in America, nurses poll as the single most respected profession in America. Did you know that?
I've heard that from people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so I find
think people think that because when they find out I'm a nurse, they send me little photos of things that, is this a rash? You know, so I guess I'm trusted.
Anyway, so we've had a wellness series that was hosted by Bridget Mouchet. And I want to thank Bridget for doing such a great job on the wellness series. Mm-hmm. She started a period in her life when she wants to travel extensively, and she's often not available by internet, which I have to tell you, I think is very good for health. So, but at the same time, it makes it very hard to run the wellness series. But
I want to do what she's doing.
The other thing is that if you look at what has happened over the last 2 years, we have more and more requests and more need for dealing with both the healthcare system, but also serious risk issues. And so we needed something that was more health oriented as opposed to wellness. And so I felt the need to do a health series, but I wanted someone to host it who had extensive knowledge in both taking care of one's own health and natural methods, but also in the traditional healthcare system. And you are very remarkable. You have extensive experience and professional experience with both. And so you have quite a resume, but let me just walk through it. So you trained in nursing at Mount St. Mary's College School of Nursing, and you are registered, you're certified. Mm-hmm. Let me describe some of the areas that you have experience in. You have experience in labor and delivery nurse. You have midwife assistant for home births. You have private nursing and home health. You are have practiced as a telehealth nurse advocate. If you look at some of your areas of expertise, vaccine injury, nutritional education, patient advocate, which has become a very important role these days, promoting self-care and infant through elder care in home health and telehealth, and women's health, prenatal, pregnancy, postmortem, and then post-surgical respiratory issues and wound. So you have quite a spectrum of both interests and experience. And one of the things that has so impressed me about you is that you have this tremendous drive to have intellectual mastery of any issue you're facing with the health and take responsibility to make sure that whatever you're doing, it has integrity. So you have an immense integrity Geiger counter, which we're going to talk about as we get into the stories of how you got to where you are. But anything, before we move on, anything you want to say about your biography and your experience that you'd like to highlight?
Well, basically, I've been out of the hospital system for over 10 years now. I left just due to, well, I got into nursing because it was hard to find a good nurse, and I knew I could be a good nurse, right? And then when I worked in the hospital, I realized, oh, it is hard to find a good nurse. but I was trained by wonderful nurses. And so, but I wanted to get out of the hospital because it became following the standards of care was, you know, that were brought down by boards of different people that had nothing to do with what was happening on the floor with that patient at the time. And so I got into home health and private duty nursing. So then I could work independently with physicians, you know, keeping the patient safe and comfortable and being able to work on their health throughout their entire lifespan. You know, I right. could become just their personal nurse that they could contact. And I think that that's important because I can do all the IVs and the fancy medications and procedures. And I've been trained in cardiac and different, you know, advanced acute care, you know, hospitalist stuff. But I really like the approach of just sitting down and holding somebody's hand and mm-hmm. then helping them gain confidence in their life ahead. So I think that that's the most important, the most exciting part of my nursing is going into people's homes. First of all, I'm nosy, so mm-hmm. it works out. But I love to go in their homes and really sit down and hear what they have to say, see where they, what their surroundings are, and then help their family, you know, to cope, right. to get to their best health.
Well, you it's know, interesting even if they're because really if you, sick. If so. You look at all your experience, both as a nurse and as a patient or as an advocate in the healthcare system, you've seen everything from the very best to the very worst. You have seen it all. It's quite remarkable. Well, let's just dive in because what we wanted to do with this first introductory okay. conversation is talk about what inspires people to take charge of their health. What happens and when they finally wake up and say, wait a minute, you know, this is my responsibility. So you and I made a list of all the stories of those paradigm shifting moments that we had personally, and we picked out three stories of your evolution as a, I'll describe you as a healthcare leader. Your evolution as a healthcare leader. And so we're going to take those stories and I want, as we're talking and discussing these, I want everybody to think about when this happened to them. And if it hasn't happened to you, how we can inspire it to happen. So let's start with the big one in your life. We called it Tag You're It, Brian's vaccine injury.
Right. Okay. All right.
It's a big story.
Sorry, so I'm going to try to make it, you know, compact. It's a big story, yeah, and it's still going on. He's 15 years old now, but we're doing really well, so that's good.
And I should say this story This story started right after you graduated from nursing school.
And I was a new grad, and I was so excited. I had my labor and delivery job and I had gotten married. You know, we only dated for 10 years. So, you know, it was a really fast whirlwind relationship. No. And we were like, okay, let's have a kid and this can be so exciting. So I had the whole thing planned because I was a nurse. I knew where the best paid nurses were. So I went to Kaiser Insurance Company. So I was at Kaiser and I had all of my lists planned out of exactly what was going to happen in my life. And you know what happens when you plan? And I was so excited in my job and I was researching everything for my son. I researched the paint and, you know, the fancy stuff that goes on and, you know, was this going to be toxic? The little onesies that he'd wear, I got organic and anyway, I went overboard, you know, for a normal mom and we had him and he was beautiful. He was born perfect. He met every milestone. I was watching him like a hawk and I brought him in, to the family pediatric center at Kaiser. And I would see a different doctor most of the time. It's kind of like a mill, right? Mm-hmm. But I thought that's exciting. It's different people. What a good idea. So I saw them, took him in for all of his shots. They made personal phone calls. They would give us special books. So we would make sure to show up. You know, it was very personalized and I had lots of attention. And I thought, what a wonderful place. This is just such a wonder. I'm taking such good care of my health and my son. So I brought him in and it was his 12-month shots. He was 14, 15 months old. And the doctor wasn't really there for very long. He just kind of checked him out. We went over all the milestones and all the notes that I took. And as a nurse, I was really taking notes. And he said, oh, he's doing wonderful. And I, you know, got him on the table and they brought in all these shots. I looked it up again, because sometimes I like to forget it, but he had the MMRVAR, the measles, mumps, rubella with the varicella, which is with the chickenpox, flu, DTaP, diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis. He had the Hep A, the Haemophilus influenza B, the Hib, and the pneumococcal. Wow. And he had all of those. So he had a shot in every chubby little appendage plus one. So he had like a double bandage on a couple. And it makes me a little nauseous to think about it. But I just whispered in his ear, it's going to be okay. It's almost over. And I bundled him up and I brought him home. And he fell asleep in the car. And it was almost in the evening. And I thought, oh, and I was expecting a fever. And I was expecting, they told me all these things to expect and that they were normal. So I let him sleep and he had a fever. I got him up to nurse a couple times, but not really. He wasn't really, he was cranky. And I thought, well, he's just got that fever. And then in the morning, my husband and I were like, Brian's not up. Because we usually go out to the kitchen, have coffee, and we can hear him giggling in his room. And he would say, mama, dada. Down, 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 because he was, you know, it was not as clear, but you could hear it. Mama, dad, dad, you know, it was really cute. He'd be screeching and happy, and it was silence. And we both looked at each other, and we were like, that's weird. I guess his fever's pretty bad or something. So we ran in, and my husband had swooped him up and was handing him to me. And I was like, what is going on? He was limp, and he looked catatonic. He looked post-ictal, like he had just had a seizure to me. Like, because I had seen that when I trained at Children's right. Hospital, we had a lot of seizures. And he was soaking wet. Just like, I remember his green onesie was squishy, you know, like everywhere. And his arms were just, and I was trying to look in his eyes and he wasn't looking at me at all. He was just looking up. He looked stunned, like he had seen a ghost. You know, mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my God, what's wrong with him? And I was like, Brian. And anytime I picked him up to put him here, he would start screaming, this really high pitched scream. And I knew as a nurse, that's not good. That means that he's got something going on, like maybe right. brain swelling, who knows? You know, I didn't know, but I knew that it was bad. It's a bad scream. If you hear it as a nurse, you'll never forget it. And so I had to hold him flat. And in my arms like this, I had to cradle him. He couldn't sit in his car seat, you know, so I tried to get him and I tilted him a little bit. We got his car seat as perfect as we could get it. So he wasn't screaming the whole way. We drove into the emergency room. And when we got in there, they took his temp, you know, checked everything. And I had told every single doctor that came in, you know how there's always a lot of doctors right. that file in. You know, because they all need to charge their money. They just file in all and they look, and there was like students there and different nurses. And I would say to them, you know, he just had his shots yesterday, or he just had his shots. You know, he just had his shots. That's what I would keep telling them. Is this normal for shots? What's going on? Is it? And some doctors would say, oh, this has nothing to do with the shots. And then some people would say, oh, well, yeah, I mean, he's going to run a fever. Well, his fever was 105. And they were giving him Tylenol. Oh, for a baby. It was awful. And they were giving him Tylenol, Advil. You know, they were rotating it. And they couldn't start an IV. They were trying to give him some fluids. I was trying to breastfeed him, but it was really hard because he was screaming and uncomfortable. And I thought, what is wrong with my baby? And I was really upset, and we were trying to figure out what was going on. And finally, they went to his regular records, and I had written it down too. His head circumference had gone from just like a 70 percentile to the 99 percentile. Like his head had swollen, you know? And so they're like, well, it's probably brain swelling. You're going to need to go and get all these tests. So they took him, because it's Kaiser, everything's like a big maze. And they took him for a scan, and then they brought him back and they gave him some of the pain medicine, and the fever wasn't that much lower, but they didn't have any beds to put him in, like a ICU or a NICU or anything like that. So it would be the pediatric ICU, and because he was over 1 year old. And I said, they said, well, since you're a nurse, you can take him home and monitor him and whatever. So I had him home, and then I was supposed to bring him back the next day, and I would go to all the different scans, all the different tests, everything we could do. So I did all that. We finally got him calm. He slept on me. I slept in a recliner, and I had to like hold him flat, and I had pillows all around. And anyway, and he, the next day was just as dull. And he wasn't able to like move half of his body. So I thought, oh my God, he's probably had a stroke. Oh, and one important thing, can't believe I forgot this. Before we left the emergency room, I kept saying to everybody, please, you know, you've got to help my baby. I think he's had the shots. Could this be the shots? And people were kind of brushing me off, whatever. One old nurse, I'm an old nurse, but this one was like battle axe nurse. You could tell that she'd been everywhere. She's the one that you go to. Like if you're ever in a hospital and you need something, you find the oldest nurse there and the one that looks like she knows what she's doing, because she's going to know more than anybody in the whole place. Right. So she came in and she was pretty quiet about it. And she said, listen, you need to call this number and you need to report this. This is a vaccine injury. This is a vaccine injury. VAERS. And I thought, VA. And she wrote it down for me. I still have the paper. And she was like, theirs. And then she said, you can just look it up. She said, it's on the back of any vaccine information form or anything. You can find it's an 800 number. And she said, you need to call it. She eventually got the number for me and wrote it down while she was kind of in the room going through and talking to me. And it was real quick. And she dropped it off. And I sat there and I went, you can report vaccine injury? And then I thought, where was I in school that day? So at the same time I'm dealing with a sick baby, I'm thinking to myself, why didn't I know this, that this could happen? You know, like I thought his fever was going to go away and he was just screaming because he just had so many shots.
Here's what I would say, you did not experience informed consent. If you did not know this could happen, then you did not get informed consent. Right.
And I went back and looked at the papers. They always make you sign the patient information forms, right? And they only listed like soreness, slight fever. You know, they didn't say possible brain damage,
right,
on the information forms. And anyway, so it does list all those on the insert inside the vaccines, but I didn't even know, we hadn't even looked at an insert in a vaccine. In fact, in nursing school, when we would have a patient, we were supposed to make drug cards, right? So we would have like a card made out, and for every single medicine that I would have to give a patient, I would have to have a drug card. I'd have to do a report on it to my preceptor. I mean, we were all about safety and medications. And right. I remember I had to do a flu shot clinic. And I remember getting out my drug cards and writing down flu shot. So I didn't, you know, I mean, and going to my professor and saying, okay, tomorrow we're doing a flu shot clinic. I've got these written. She says, oh, no, you don't have to do drug cards for the flu shot. I was like, okay. I'm like, but aren't there like egg allergies or something? Because I remember hearing something about that. And plus we all had to get them before and I got pretty sick. So I thought, oh, nobody likes flu shots. And she said, oh, no, it's not a big deal. We don't need to write down any of the ingredients or any of the stuff. And I was like, okay. So but I remember that. So anyway, the nurse tells me this, there's, and so I know like something's clicking.
Something's
and as
wrong.
I'm going through that night, and then I get home and I'm watch, I know something's wrong. And things, little signs, you know how God gives you little signs, that little voice inside you that says, no, that's not right. No, this isn't right. Oh, you probably shouldn't do that. But then you kind of brush it off. All those started coming back to me, right? And so I thought, you know, I remembered when I was taking him in for his shots, I don't think I had shots when I was a kid. I might've had two, you know, like I didn't remember it being this big of a deal with 72 doses, right? I didn't remember that huge of a deal, but right. Then I kind of brushed it off because they told me it's safe and effective.
Right.
Anyway, so I get home, I go to Kaiser the next day, we're there. We're scanning, we're going to MRI, we're going to pharma, we're going everywhere. I'm breastfeeding them, and then they're telling me, oh, here's some formula, you know, you're a little stressed and dehydrated, you should probably feed them that. And I was like, no, thanks. And there was all these things going on, and the whole entire time I was there, they weren't as nice to me this time as they were the times before, you know, like, because I was there with a child who had something wrong with him, and I was saying he had his vaccines the day before, right? Everybody was kind of like, oh, you know, I didn't have like, here's your free book and come on in and giving me a hug. Oh, we love people at Kaiser. It's a family. You know, there was none of that. It was just, oh, you can sit over there and, you know, do you mind not breastfeeding right there? Maybe you can sit over there. You know, like they were really kind of weird to me, especially in like the labs and the testing and stuff. It was really odd. And everybody was kind of like, they put on their armor and didn't want to talk to me. So I thought that was strange. Anyway, so I finally meet with some of the doctors because they get all the tests and everything. I had some lunch in the campus of Kaiser. And then I went back into the doctor and he said, well, you know, it looks like his brain swelled. We'll have to see. The fever is still pretty high, but, you know, we're just going to work on it. You know, we feel that that's just his immune system working and we're not really sure. I think it's just going to be fine. We'll have to see. That was kind of like their thing. And I'm like, he's not the same baby. I went to bed and my baby was this, and now another baby is here. This isn't my Brian. It's not Brian. And I said that like a couple of times. And I thought, I couldn't believe I was saying that out loud, because who would say that about their baby? But it was as if his soul was kidnapped and some other soul was put in, you know, it was still squishy and cute and adorable, but he was high-pitched scream. There was no communication and he didn't look me in the eye at all. And this was a kid who at one I could be like, and he would like try to wink back, I swear. So mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't treated very well, and I was exhausted, and I got a whole list of things to do. And they said, now with swollen brain and we're not really sure, and we can see that he's a little weak on one side, we want you to go to all these therapies, they said. And it probably is going to turn out, they said, that this might turn into speech delays, etc., because we see that he has lost all of his words, right? As I went to the campus, it was a few days of interesting topics of what should I do about this, what should I do about that, and I would call this person, call that person. They ended up giving me a handout that said that after all of these things, all of these places that will you can go to, physical therapy and this therapy and that therapy that Kaiser will pay for, then you're going to have to switch over to the school district, and that they would be able to take care of your son once he gets like an autism or a speech delay or a developmental delay label. You have to get the label first and then you go to the school district. And I sat there and I thought, LAUSD is going to be where I go when my baby is screaming when he sits up and his brain is swelled, and it was obviously after vaccinations, and nothing can be done. And I can already see him slipping further and further away and changing into a different person. And that's all they could tell me. So I took that paper, took everything, drove home, told my husband, you know, I don't know what we're going to do. And he's like, well, let's just pray about it. Think about it. Let's see what we're going to do. I went over all the paperwork again. And I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, okay, I held him down, squishy little baby, told him it was going to be just fine. I let them inject him in every single appendage, squishy little tiny appendage. And all of a sudden it hit me. When I was trained in school, if I dropped a vaccine on the floor, I had to call hazmat. You weren't allowed to touch it. You weren't allowed to flush it down the toilet because it had mercury and other toxins in it. So if I dropped one of the vials, any of the vials, because I had learned how to give all vaccines, I knew how to do it. I was public health certified. I mean, that's part of the school I went to. And if you drop it, hazmat, you stay away, the lights go on. But I let them just, oh yeah, is that the same vial that, you know, when you drop it, we put on a space suit? Oh, wonderful. Because now you can inject it into my son. That's a great idea. In fact, let's inject every appendage. I was so angry at myself. I thought, what was wrong with me? I could feel myself waking up as I was sitting on the couch, staring at all these papers. And my husband was holding our son because we couldn't lay him down by himself. He was too uncomfortable and screaming. And I thought, you know, Jen, you did this to him and now you're going to have to fix him, because you were just at a place where you pay pretty good money to go to and nobody wanted to help you. Nobody. Nobody cared. Nobody had a book on this is what happens. And so I said, I'm going to have to do this myself. So I started doing research, and a few months later, as he started to lose more and more skills, he lost all of his ability to walk, and he was barely crawling. He had to crawl on one side. He used to rip up pants on one side, and then he had he lost every word. You know, it went from like mama, dad, 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 bop, bop, ma, and then nothing. And he was that way. It was awful. And he got really bad. And I remembered that Jenny McCarthy had just been on Oprah. And I also remembered from my former career as a costume designer, people that knew her. And I thought, I got to figure out where she is. So I got a book that I had bought for my mom called Mother Warrior. And I opened it up and saw, oh, Sherman Oaks, right down the street. So I got all the information, called. They were actually setting up a school in her backyard called Teach to Talk. And I thought, school in her backyard? She wasn't sent to like the school district, you know, like my list. So I went and I met with her. She was wonderful. And we talked for a good half hour. She went over everything. She also played with Brian for a long time too, while I was getting a tour of Teach to Talk. But I came out of that tour of the different types of speech therapies and stuff. And I said, wow, I said, that's really amazing. You're setting it up in your backyard. She says, yes, you have to do everything yourself.
Okay, now I want to stop you there. I want to stop you because one of the things I find the most remarkable about your story is that you figured out very, very quickly that the traditional system had no integrity for you and you had to leave it immediately and go out on your own. And what I've seen is people in a similar circumstance, they spend years trying to get the system to work. They can't fathom that the system has no integrity for them and that they are entirely responsible to find that which does have integrity, which is a whole different kind of journey. But you figured it out very quickly and switched immediately and made much more progress because you grappled with and understood the integrity issue.
Yeah. And I think it's because I had been on the other side and I knew what I was trained. So I knew what everybody else was trained as. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to convince them of the disconnect between hazmat suit spill on the floor and injecting into baby's limbs. And I just thought that's poison, that, you know, it's poison. I can't explain it, but I just knew. Right. And I also knew that I had spent so much time filling out forms, paperwork. I had to keep going back to one doctor to get referred over to these other places just when I was there with appointments for the other places. But they were like, oh, do you have your referral slip? Do you have this? There's all this busy work. And you have a baby that's sick. And you think, really? You know, I have the appointment. So it all kind of just, it was the perfect storm for me to just go, wake up. I got to get out of here because this is going to kill him. Right. Or we're going to just do this forever. I mean, was I just going to wander in the Kaiser Plaza forever? You know? So when I saw Jenny, she said, you know, Brian's about 3 years younger than Evan was, her son. And he was doing well, you know, lots of hard work, lots of therapy. But she said, listen, she says, I know that it's going to be hard. She says, because, you know, her circumstances, if she needs to take a private jet because of a screaming child to get somewhere, she can go do a really crappy movie of the week, she said, you know, right. And then she's like, okay, now I'll buy the $10,000 seat and I'll go and do, you know, and I knew that my husband and I weren't going to be able to do that, you know, so she says, but there's ways. She says, there's called bartering and trade. She says, you're a nurse. She says, use that, you know, go and learn all of the things that you have to learn. Use your medical knowledge. She said, and then you can go on and you're going to have to just pay cash. She says, and negotiate. She says, you can do that.
So that's the other thing you learned very early on, which was most of what you needed was a cash, you know, leave the insurance behind. It's not going to help you pay cash. And so it's all about your time and your cash and what you can do with your time and cash and getting, and the beauty of what you did was you saved yourself from most of the time waste.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, immediately. So when I needed to get a therapist, what I did was I just, the next day I wrote everything down. I went to Autism One. It's a conference that's in Chicago. It's pretty famous because, you know, everybody goes there, all the parents. So that's another thing she told me about. And she said, listen, these are the doctors I like. So, you know, you get the personal referrals of the ones that you can trust. And then she said, this is the conference I go to. This is you're going to meet all the moms and dads there. Go to the parents, learn from them, and get your, you know, get your circle, you know? Right. So that's what I did.
Right. You circled up, you built an intelligence network and you still have it. It's still growing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's and it's amazing because it's the only
huge
person I've seen,
it's crazy.
When I see you post, you know, you can post more good, quick, practical economic ideas. The only person I've seen do it that fast is Jack Ma. So I kind of think of Jennifer Walters and Jack Ma as two people who know how to just, you know, well, it's cash and time. You know what I mean? It's a ruthless kind of cash and time.
Yeah.
Anyway, but getting that good intelligence and finding the players or the doctors or the nurses or the healthcare people who have integrity, it goes by word of mouth. And what's interesting is the extent to which the parents of vaccine injured children have built a phenomenal intelligence network and left the medical establishment just behind.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They just left them behind. It's like, okay, you're not relevant.
Oh, yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. We love our doctors. We love our nurses. We love our medical professionals, but they have a thing at the very top of all of their websites or their papers that say, we do not accept insurance.
Right.
And really what that means to them is we're not going to waste our time arguing with somebody at an insurance company so they can give their patient what they need.
Right. Right. They've learned doesn't work. Okay. So before we go on to our second story, avoid the zombie traps. Anything else you want to say about your incredible journey as the mother of a vaccine injured child?
Well, we learn something new every day. I have developed all of my best friends. I would say most of them are, I just have a small handful, and I have a couple really good ones that I didn't know before this. And we met on Yahoo groups where we just used to type, because what we do when you hear ex-vaxxer or vaccine injured or anti-vaxxer, when you hear that, just think of a mom after everybody goes to bed. We stay up and read for 4 hours.
Right.
You know, that's what we do. And we're typing back and forth. So we're creating this knowledge. So it's a really great community. This COVID thing really tested that community though. You know, like it really, we were all on our mark, like, okay, we can handle this, you know.
Well, speaking of which, so let's turn to avoid the zombie traps. So you came into COVID understanding the limitations of the healthcare system, but being very knowledgeable about it. I mean, you're a practicing nurse. So tell us about the strangeness of COVID for you.
Well, when it first started, I would say January, February, 2020, right? I was just watching it, monitoring it. And I thought, oh, okay, well, another weird flu thing or whatever they're spraying us with, right? Because poisons are everywhere. And I thought, I better get all of my patients, I call them my community. I'm a volunteer. I am not making money at any of the, you know, I am just here to help anybody in my community, you know, get better from whatever they need. I'm here to help them find what they need. I'm really good at research, and then they can read the rest. I gathered up a bunch of supplements that I thought were interesting, and I took photos of them and put them on Instagram. And I was like, getting ready for the, you know, the flu or whatever was coming. In fact, I have a bunch of memes I looked up on my earlier Instagrams, and one of them was a woman with like a megaphone and it said bullshit on the front of it. And another one was like a cell phone that said bullshit's calling. So I thought, oh my God, something bad's coming. You know, I'm not sure what, but you know, something's bad. And just the hype that was happening, put all the supplements up. I started talking about terrain, you know, build up your terrain, because whatever it is, we can handle this, you know, have your nebulizers, you know, whatever. I was just ready. I started monitoring. I immediately was like, what does Meryl say? Where's Dr. Nass? You know, and so I was monitoring her site, Dr. Brownstein, you know, I was right in the middle of watching him with a couple of people, and his site was his YouTube was taken down. And I thought, oh, well, I was on the right track. So there you go. Right. Anyway, and I started calling around to my nurses that were in the hospital, finding out what's going on, what's going on. And I was sending messages to some of the ones that I hadn't talked to for a while, for a little bit. But they were, you know, school friends, whatever, people that I'd worked with. And I would go on their Instagram. I don't have TikTok, but I'd go on their Instagram. And they would, instead of like supplements or hang in there or something like that, they would be standing there like with a mask on and like their heart and saying, I'm at work so you can stay with your family, you know, things like that. And I'm like, that was weird. So I'd swipe. And then I saw another one. One of them was like standing there and she was like taking a selfie, like next to the, like the critical care ward, but no patients or anything. She wasn't doing anything bad, but it was like a weird photo. And I thought, and she was looking sad, like, sad, you know, I thought, what is she doing? You know, and I even said, she said,
it wasn't like a
I'm
real nurse.
I'm leaving my home so I can care for you. No, it was, she went from being normal nurse. Like the pictures were never of her as a nurse. This is the thing. We don't like the way we look in scrubs. Okay. And so we're not going to be like, I'm in my scrubs and I'm a nurse. You know, no, we go, we get vomited on, and then we change our clothes and we come home. You know, it's like we don't, that's not something you do. You don't walk around as a nurse going, well, I'm a nurse. You know, you don't do that. But all of a sudden it became that they were obsessed with us. Then I started seeing choreographed dances and videos of whole wards of nurses dancing and doctors. And these weren't just like the Macarena that you can do even while drunk. People know how to do the Macarena. No, these were choreographed dances that had like special things and Beyonce type dances. I can't remember a time that I worked a shift in critical care that I couldn't, that I got a chance to pee. Okay. You don't get to take a break to go to the bathroom. You barely get to eat. You have to look at your watch and you have to get your manager, and the manager says, okay, we're going to switch you out. And then we're going to switch you out. And then you're going to go in. And so you're basically shoveling food in. You know, mac and cheese is great because you can throw broccoli in it, you know, and just like shovel it and swallow it whole while you're running back to get back on the floor. I mean, sometimes we would be that busy, right. You know, and then we would have patients put into the hallway and put a, you know, I mean, it was always backed right, but up.
It's an environment where things are a matter of life and death. It's not entertainment. It's not a theater set.
Yeah.
Right. So there's something unbelievably inappropriate going on.
And our phone was never there to take a picture. Like I had my phone in its, you know, safety shield. Cause I thought, God, I'm having to carry it in my pocket. You know, I'll get a leg tumor, you know? But I remember always having my phone and being happy it was there, because then I could write a note, or I could, you know, not about the patient, but something that I wanted to remember or look up. Or sometimes I could get information to a patient, you know, say, oh, well, this website would be an interesting thing for you to look at, you know, vitamin C or lysine is good for lips if you have a lot of cold sores, because a lot of people come in and get major medications, they'd start to break out. You know, it was always there as kind of like a tool. Right. But I never thought to myself, I'm going to take a picture of myself as a nurse, you know, so, and I was writing to my friends going, what are you doing? I even said to one of my friends, I said, well, they're not really friends anymore. They blocked me. But right after I said that, but I just said, listen, I said, I don't know what this is. I said, but you have 5 pictures of yourself in your scrubs with a mask on. I said, that's like normal for us. So why is that all of a sudden any different from what it was yesterday? And I know people are like, oh, but they're scared. It's a new virus. Look, that's what we're trained for. And it's called universal precautions. And I've worked with all sorts of patients, and we keep ourselves healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And then we wear our universal precautions, and then we change them out and we put them back in and we change them out. You know, I didn't understand what was happening. It was as if television had taken over. And I worked as a costume designer for about 10 years, you know, saving up to become a nurse. And I loved working TV shows and working, you know, I did lots of extra work, and, you know, I would be the costume designer for extras on big shows. And, it was a lot of fun. I would do little straight to video shoots and stuff like that. And it was so much fun. But the one thing that I do know is how fake everything is. And, right. You know, I mean, it's just, advertising world, it was as if show business had come in and like changed some of my nurse friends into actors. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I don't, it was really strange. And the other thing was a good friend from school, she was a sorority sister of mine. I checked on everybody all the time. And I was posting something about terrain, keep your terrain healthy or something like that. And she had a post down below that was pretty angry. And I thought, oh my God, what's wrong with her? And what's going on? So she's like, my mother-in-law is in the hospital right now. She says, and they don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, oh, well, I have a perfect thing. The new critical care guidance from it was the pre-FLCCC. It was the EVMC or something. Dr. Paul Merrick had put out a list of things that he was using Mm-hmm. So, and they said, distribute this to everybody. So I had just finished giving it to like three doctors that I knew that were working on the hospital floor. And they were like, oh, wow, this is incredible. And anyway, but they weren't allowed to use it in their hospital. But when they first saw it, they were excited about it. Anyway, so I sent it to her and I said, listen, I messaged it to her from the messenger app and said, here, give this to the nurses, have them call me if they need anything. I will find out where this guy is. He's somewhere in Eastern Virginia and you can call him and get their doctors. And I thought she was going to be like, oh my God, great. So she did say, oh my God, great. And then she gave it to them. And then she said, oh, they don't want to have anything to do with it. They don't like to use hydroxychloroquine, or they think vitamin C, they don't use any of this stuff. There's nothing they can do. She's been given remdesivir. She's on a vent and that's it. And I thought, what is going on? So it just gave me chills all up and down my body. I had nurses turning from regular moms in their photos to being masked nurses with a heart-shaped hand, you know, and look how cool I am. And TikTok dances everywhere. And then now I can't get a nurse on an ICU floor with a dying patient to even look at something that says, hey, when you're in this stage, you know, because he had it all broken down into stages of what to do. It was like guidelines and it was healing people. Right. And she didn't even care. So they had been abducted or body snatched or I don't know. It was really scary though. And my friends that didn't like it, they ended up going to New York to check it out because they thought, well, I'll just go, if I don't like what's happening at my hospital, I'll go to New York and try to help there. And they were finding terrible things. In fact, I think we're going to interview one on one of the investigative reports that we'll put together for Solari. She went to New York and she found that they were killing patients. Just
right.
It was as if all medical body systems, you know, differential diagnosis, all the things that you would use as a doctor, all the things that you would use as a nurse. Like when I get somebody who has pneumonia, who's on a ventilator, let's say, I don't let them sit on the ventilator all day. I think, okay, we got to get him off of it, right? That's the first thing in my head. And, oh, he needs to sit up, cardiac chair, beds with air pressure stuff. You can order all kinds of stuff as a nurse. And especially if you're working for like a really great hospital system or, you know, the VA, you could order anything, you know, and they'd show up and you can get stuff for your patients. You get them up, you get them exercise, you do pulmonary toilet, you bang on their back to get them to cough, all these things. And yet nurses were standing outside of rooms and doctors were outside of rooms and patients were just flat on their backs. Sometimes they were prone, but I thought, okay, but they're moving, right? No, there weren't any bed baths going on. There was no family there. You know, I mean, I depend on the family as a nurse to help me. They let me know, oh, she's not normal today. You know, like, because I can't tell. I don't know if that's your baseline or if this is your baseline. Anyway, it had all gone out the window. And I was hearing from New York, from nurses. One even went undercover and did video to show how bad it was because she didn't think anybody would believe her, you know, how bad it was. All the protocols stopped and everything became COVID, remdesivir, ventilator. And that was it.
Right.
So
part of what we have to navigate is we're living in a world where zombie medicine happens. And so part of being successful in taking care of your health is knowing how to avoid the zombies. Okay, so third story, real quick, access the lifesavers. You know, it would be easy if we could just leave the entire medical system behind, but I don't think we can. So I used an example of trauma and antibiotics, but there's certain things the healthcare system does, the medical system does that are just fantastic. So I feel antibiotics have saved my life on more than one occasion, but you talked about having surgery after a car accident, trauma. And think of what your life would have been like if you couldn't have that surgery.
My spine, I had three ruptured discs. They had ruptured towards the front and all of my vertebrae had kind of twisted. I tore a bunch of muscles. I crushed my sciatic nerve.
Oof.
It was just awful. I wasn't walking. I was just in my 20s and 21. And I mean, I had shrunk maybe 2 inches. You know, it was, I was kind of twisted over and I couldn't walk. I couldn't lift my leg, my iliopsoas muscle and everything. And nothing was getting nerves innervated. It was really awful. And I was able to go, and it was a horrendous surgery. It was 12 hours long and they did a front and a back, but I was better, you know, like it took a while of therapy and everything, but I'm walking, you know, I work as a nurse, you know, that kind of thing. So it worked. I would never be without, you know, trauma surgeons or, you know, any of that wonderful stuff. You know, it's just that something else has to happen.
Okay. So 3 stories, one of tag your it and vaccine injury, one of zombies literally killing you in the hospital, and then the third of needing to access these incredible services, particularly in a trauma situation. And what I'm hearing is the fact that we have to be unbelievably knowledgeable and intelligent to figure out how to get what we need and avoid everything else. This is not, you know, I think you have to be absolutely, you know, to achieve the literacy you need to navigate the healthcare system is an astonishing accomplishment. And you're one of the few people I've ever known who I think has really managed it. So it's like you have an outward bound PhD in navigating the healthcare system. Anyway, but that's what I'm hoping in the health series that you can. I mean, first of all, we want to do everything we can do for ourselves and not, you know, the more we can do for ourselves, the more economic, the more practical. But then we still need to navigate the healthcare system in many different ways. So I'm hoping on the health series that your mission can be to help people start to grow, to be as knowledgeable and as capable as you are at this. Can we do it?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, there's geniuses on Solari. So they're, the super geniuses of Solari are going to help me. We're going to be able to do it.
So I know what you mean, because there are a lot of subscribers that are smarter than me. And we want to invite everybody in the commentary for this Solari report. Jennifer's now working on what the first interview she's going to be doing are. So if you could post any feedback you have for her. A lot of you may know her from subscriber input anyway, but post any feedback you have on what you would love, what kind of interviews and shows you would like, and what would be most useful. And I just have to underscore the disclaimer that Jennifer is not here to give you healthcare advice. In other words, she's here to help you figure out how to take charge of your own health and to navigate the system. But this is a disclaimer. We're not here to give healthcare advice on the Solari report. So just remember, she doesn't know you. She doesn't know your case history. She can't give you healthcare advice, but what she can tell you is teach you how to take charge of your own healthcare. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to do today was I love to recommend movies. I love to recommend documentaries. I love to recommend books. I wanted you and I to put together a list of some of our favorite, most inspiring sources, and we'll put this in the commentary so everybody can read it. And I'll put mine in the commentary. I won't read mine, but I thought you might I asked you to put, to give us several sources and ask you to post some of your inspiration. So walk us through your list. And again, this will be in the commentary.
Okay. All right. So just read the list. Okay. Well, there's, I have the books here. This was a really important book, The Age of Autism.
Great book. Great book.
Medicine and a Man-Made Epidemic. It's great. And you know, what was really neat about it was I was like, I'm going to look up that book. Most of these books that I have are given to me by people. I still have the card. I use it as a bookmark. This was dated 2011, but a mommy that I helped her son, and I didn't do anything to her son. I'm not a doctor. I just said, oh, this is what I do, and this is where I go, and this is the things that you could look at, and maybe think about this, and this, you know, and these are the labs I did. You know, we just kind of talked it out, you know, like moms do. And she actually stood in line, and she got it autographed by Dan Olmsted.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And she sent me the book. Yeah. So I'm always getting little things. So, you know, people are always like, you volunteer for everything. And I'm like, you have no idea. I get so much more than, you know, a paycheck when I do things like this. So, you know, I can make money other ways. I can dig a ditch, paint a house.
Right.
No. So anyway, but Age of Autism is wonderful. Robert Kennedy really summed it up. A devastating account that shows how medical and manufacturing interests have mounted an assault on human health for decades and covered their tracks along the way. Autistic children are the canaries in the coal mine. And it kind of goes through the whole thing, you know.
Right.
I really liked it. It's a, you know, and then Dissolving Illusions, right?
That's a great
it's a big
one.
Book by Dr. Yeah. Suzanne Humphreys. And yeah, and Bistrionic, Roman Bistrionic. He, it's wonderful. Roman was just a Roman, like I know him. Roman, I think I know all these people. You know, when my kids were putting together a surprise party list, they started writing down names. I'm like, no, honey, I don't actually know those people. They're just people that I read and talk about a lot. Embarrassing. No friends that are real. So anyway, he was just on Germ Warfare, I think, maybe 6-7 months ago. So that's an interesting interview if you want to watch that one for this. And then they just got it out on audio because some people don't like to read a big, thick book. I mean, Solari
it's
people
a great
will, but,
history
you know.
Of
and,
vaccines.
Let's see. It is. It's it goes through what was actually happening and shows you that there have been anti-vaxxers forever, right? People burying their children at 12 from a, you know, vaccine mandates, you know, even back in the, you know, early 1900s, et cetera. So anyway, and then one of my favorite books ever on nutrition, Our Children Are What Our Children Eat by Dr. Laura Thompson. And I just love her so much. And I love this book. And page at the back, I have it. It's so dog-eared. Look how bent it is. It's ridiculous. I think there's probably goo on here or something. Who knows? I'm embarrassing. I don't take care of my books. But anyway, she has a 30-day game plan in here. And it is for anybody. She calls it a 30-day game plan for redesigning life. And it's action steps for your 30-day game plan. And she just talks about all these different things you can do. And you don't even have to have kids to love this book. This is we are what we eat. And she even talks about how to, you know, instead of 7-Up, you know, use a Hansen soda, you know, or she'll go through different, or a stevia soda. And, you know, she shows how to replace things. So you're not really giving up, but you're changing the way you look at your food.
Right.
And
right.
Anyway, it's really interesting. And then I'm a big fan of, oh, I don't know where that book went. Oh, here it is. I'm a big fan of chelation. I chose low dose chelation, something that's timed, because as a nurse, I like to look at the pharmacological ways that things work in your body. And I like to have a double thiol go in, grab all the mercury and take it out through the urine, you know, that kind of thing. So I met up with a group. This is started as a Yahoo group, and Jan Martin and Tressie Taylor, Fight Autism and Win. And even if you don't have a kid with autism, even if you just have a headache or you have weird things, thyroid problems, it's a great little book. You know, you could just get it at, I think it's fightautismandwin.com.
Oral chelation
but anyway,
saved my
it's
life.
Really short, and it goes over. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Brian reads and does math and laughs, and yeah, it saved his life too. And it's amazing. I mean, and this is the low dose. So if you're ever afraid of, you know, like it's a real safe way. I really like it. It's based on the Andrew Cutler protocol. And then the other one is frightening. Oh gosh, I do have them all. That's crazy. Undercover Epicenter Nurse was another one.
I didn't realize she had written a book until I saw your list.
Yeah. I was so excited when it came out. It's signed too. But she says it's how fraud, negligence, and greed led to unnecessary deaths at Elmhurst Hospital. So now this is Erin Marie. And then my other nursing, the other super nurse that was another New York nurse that reported, she actually lives in Nevada. She started American Frontline Nurses. So anyway, but this book is just, it's amazing and it's devastating. And I watched her video when she came out and started doing her whistleblowing, and you listen to the numbers she was saying, or you listen to the, you know, as a nurse, you listen to people standing around a bed and talking over a man who shouldn't even be dead, you know, or dying. And they're saying that they're not going to resuscitate him if he stops breathing because he's already been on the vent for a long time and it's COVID. I mean, 39, you know, like you listen to what's going on and you know the situation. It gives me chills just thinking about it. You think, what has happened, you know? Right. And so really working on this with you, I really want to find places we can trust.
Right.
You know?
Right. One of the biggest activities
now.
As many people pull away from that, which doesn't have integrity, they're grappling with, okay, how do we start to build something that has integrity? Because that's what we're going to have to do. So this is going to be a journey.
Yep.
You know, the world is changing and we're going to have to become our own healthcare leaders and we're going to have to change with the world. And I really am so glad that we have someone with your background and experience to help us do that. And I think, you know, we have a lot of very smart healthcare people in our network. At the same time, I'm a great believer that we have to start by doing as much as we can ourselves, and it has to be time effective, it has to be economic, and it has to be practical. And you understand the practical and the economic and the do-it-yourself all the way to the most sophisticated. It's very hard to find somebody who has that range that I want to talk to. Occasionally I can find people with that range, but I don't want to talk to them. Anyway, so Jennifer, we're looking forward to this Larry Health series. Thank you so much for taking this on. I know it's a big job and I'm really glad you're doing it. So from every one of us at the Solari Report, remember everyone, give Jennifer your comments, your thoughts, and your ideas, and we're off to the races.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Solari Report, Jennifer. Have a wonderful
day.
So
exciting. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.